today on Annenberg Radio News.
It was a elegant restaurant, and I wish that it would be restored to that level again. I love this place.
Clifton Cafeteria is loved by many of its faithful patrons, but could things change with the new owner? Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, September 21st, 2010. And I'm Madeline Cinto. Today, police arrested 8 current and former City of Bell officials. The arrests come after District Attorney Steve Cooley charged them with misappropriating $5.5 million in city funds and falsifying documents. 2 officials paid themselves $400,000, this in a city with a median income of about $41,000. Cooley says council members also received $1.2 million for meetings that lasted only a couple minutes. Among these arrested include Bell Mayor Oscar Rodriguez and former city manager Robert Rizzo. Rizzo now faces 53 counts of misappropriation and conflict of interest. Here with me now is ATVN anchor Alexis Zotos, who was at the news conference this morning. Thank you for joining us, Alexis.
Thanks.
So, I hear there's an interesting angle to the case. Could you tell us what happened?
Well, basically, all 8 of these officials were booked at the LA County Jail tomorrow and will face arraignment tomorrow morning. They cannot, however, post bond until the district attorney's office has had the chance to see where those funds for the bail will be coming from, which makes a lot of sense since these officials are being charged with misappropriating city funds. So they will not be able to post bail until the funds are discovered where they're being obtained from.
So, I mean, how long could this go on for? How long could they stay in jail? Is this an undetermined amount of time?
That information wasn't given to us. They just basically said they need to see where the funds for the bail money will come from before they will accept them.
And do we know how they're going to go about doing that at all?
We don't.
Oh, okay. And just one last question. Did the district attorney say they found similar misconduct in any of the other cities?
They said there are always ongoing investigations in all Los Angeles cities. They've done investigations in numerous other cities over the past years that District Attorney Cooley has been in office. But right now, their focus is on the city of Bell and this corruption case.
And they didn't mention any other cities at all?
No, they did not.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Alexis. And if we want to learn more on this Bell story, where should we go?
For ATVN's full coverage of the Bell corruption case, you can tune in tonight at 6 o'clock on Trojan Vision for Annenberg TV News.
All right. Thank you so much. And just one other part to the story, the state attorney general is also suing the city of Bell. And today, the LA Board of Supervisors unanimously voted to ask Attorney General Jerry Brown to appoint an interim administrator to manage Bell. A 20-year-old man was sentenced to 32 years in prison today for taking part in a gang shooting. No one was hurt during the shooting, and that's why some people are upset that he got a longer sentence than defendants charged with murder. Rebecca Shonikoff talked to one group protesting the verdict.
Teddy Snyder, now 19, was convicted of a gang shooting when he was 15 years old. With mandatory minimums, Snyder was facing 80 years to life. Kim McGill teaches social justice organizing and the history of movement building at the Youth Justice Coalition. Her students are kids straight out of lockup, some as old as 24 who hadn't been to school in years. Today, they're here for Snyder. Here's Kim McGill.
He imposed what was judicial discretion on this case. He imposed, instead of a 74-to-life sentence, a 32-to-life sentence. But we still don't think this is the justice we were looking for.
Snyder's one of many kids facing near-life sentences. McGill is focused on what she considers outrageous sentences for kids.
Young people are getting 111 to life, even 200, 250 to life sentences at the ages of 14, 15, 16, 17 years old.
What about people who view these kids as violent predators?
We are not saying that people shouldn't be held accountable for our actions, which is, I think, oftentimes how we're portrayed. We're not saying that at all. In fact, our membership has gone to way more funerals than graduations, and no one wants the death and destruction to stop in the streets more than black and brown youth.
Teddy Snyder has spent the past 4 years in prison. He's back there now, by the judge's orders, for another 28 years. Rebecca Schoenkopf, Annenberg Radio News.
Two bills that have been in talks for years today hit another dead end in Congress. Senate Republicans voted unanimously against the defense bill, which would have repealed the 17-year-old Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy and would have pushed through the DREAM Act. Senator Harry Reid attached the 10-year-old DREAM Act to the defense bill. It would have given undocumented youth a chance to stay in the U.S. legally if they spent 2 years in college or the military. Carlos, an undocumented UCLA student, says students like him are in limbo.
We're very saddened and upset at Congress and that they continue to put their agenda first before the lives of others and the betterment of the country. So at this time, we're committed to continue pushing forward. We're not giving up and we will never give up.
DREAM Act supporters are meeting in front of the federal building in downtown L.A. Right now, they say they'll put pressure on Reid to introduce the DREAM Act as a standalone bill before the November elections. A bomb squad responded to a call about a suspicious package on USC's campus today. The police evacuated the Hedco Neurosciences building, but they didn't find a bomb. What they did find was a magazine with a flashing light as part of a promotional gift. The Metro Transit Authority is considering whether to cut 15 bus lines, including two rapid bus lines in South Los Angeles. Kana Chuang from the MTA board says they're cutting the rapid buses on Manchester and Florence Avenue that don't have very many riders.
Well, there's one line in particular that we actually didn't even find anyone on the line. Even so, when we have these low productive lines in areas where there is not any duplication in service, there's no alternative, then we'll choose to keep that line out just to provide mobility for people. We don't want to strand people.
But the bus riders union says the cuts will strand people. Eric Roman represents the organization.
There are a few cases in which people will have no alternatives, but in most cases people will have an alternative, but the alternative means significantly longer travel times when travel times are already quite long for a lot of people. It will make it even more difficult for people to get to work or look for a job.
Chuang says budget cuts force the MTA to cut lines, but that most riders understand.
We went to about 12 different locations and talk to people specifically on the buses and at the street corners where people would be impacted. They understood what we had to do, and we wanted to make sure that they knew that there was parallel service within a quarter mile or a half mile away that they can use.
The Bus Riders Union is asking the MTA to transfer funding from rail and highway projects to maintaining bus lines. The MTA board will take a final vote on Thursday. Today we had partly cloudy skies with a high of 74 degrees. Tonight we'll have a low of 58 degrees. Tomorrow there may be some rain, so pack an umbrella. At night the low will be 56 degrees. Later on Annenberg Radio News, a teacher from Manual Arts High School responds to the controversy surrounding value-added teachers' evaluations. Clifton's Cafeteria is the oldest cafeteria in LA and the largest in the world. Now it's getting a new owner and a facelift. Ariel Edwards-Levy reports from downtown.
Some family businesses pass the torch between generations. At Clifton's Cafeteria,
we want to present this cafeteria tray as a baton of the legacy of Clifford Clinton going from one generation to the other.
That tray carries a long legacy. Clifton's is the last of a chain founded in the 1930s. During the Depression, it was both affordable and an escape. Outside, Clifton's blends into the surrounding jewelry district. Inside, it's a whimsical forest wonderland. Diners chow down on turkey dinners and jello by an indoor river. Life-size fake redwood trees and a wall-sized mural line the room. The kitsch doesn't seem like a natural fit for Clifton's new owner. Developer Andrew Myron is best known for creating trendier venues, like the Edison downtown. But the moment he walked into Clifton's, he fell in love.
The first thought was, I can't believe somebody did this. They actually went ahead and did it. I was absolutely in love with the fact that there are people out there, they spent their time, they found the artisans, and they're still doing it, and that it's still here and survived.
Myron has big plans for the cafeteria. He wants to add a lounge and bakery, and to keep it open 24/7. That all sounds good to the former owners, Donald Clinton and his son Robert. They're staying on as landlords.
We've seen his plans, we've listened to him, we're as excited as he is about it. And so when we do come here to the cafeteria, we will be as visitors, but we'll also be eating.
Luis Hernandez will still be eating there too. He's been a regular since 1956, but he's excited to see the changes.
When I met my first wife, this is where I brought her to eat. It's a special treat. This was a fantastic, elegant restaurant, and I wish that it would be restored to that level again. I love this place.
Clifton's will be hiring 100 new staff as part of a job training program with the Midnight Mission. Ariel Edwards-Levy, Annenberg Radio News.
The Southern California Gas Company said it's committed to letting customers know where its pipelines are. This comes after the deadly pipeline explosion that killed 4 people earlier this month. PG&E owned the pipeline that caused fire to sweep homes in San Bruno. They released a list of its riskiest pipelines on Monday. Although some question the accuracy of the list because the pipeline that caused the devastation wasn't even on it. Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa started a campaign to encourage volunteerism. UCLA jumped on board right away. They sent out students to different locations in Los Angeles today to lend a hand. Reporter Esther King has the story.
More than 5,000 UCLA freshmen, transfer students, and volunteer leaders reported to 22 locations across Los Angeles today. It's part of their second annual Volunteer Day. They were cleaning beaches in Malibu, assisting veterans, washing vehicles at a hospital, and mentoring students at Gompers Middle School in South L.A. Antoinette Mangeli, the executive director of the UCLA Volunteer Center, says Gompers has a special place in her heart.
Last year when we were at Gompers, it was a coincidence that one of our freshman students went to Gompers Middle School. So we were able to take this kid and have him talk to a lot of other students to say that you can go to UCLA too.
This effort comes one day after Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa announced a new initiative to engage more Angelenos in volunteerism. He held a news conference at Carver Middle School with many of the city's key leaders, including Rafael Gonzalez. He's the LA's chief service officer.
And we have to go out there and make sure that the community knows that they can get involved and that they can make a difference this way, because for many years, you know, volunteerism has not been respected in that level. And we're here to change that.
The initiative is called We Serve LA. It will focus on using volunteerism to improve education, economic development, and the environment. Esther King, Annenberg Radio News.
There's been a lot of buzz about standardized test scores and the Los Angeles Times teacher database that judges teachers on those scores. John Hankey has some thoughts on using the tests to evaluate teachers. He teaches at Manual Arts High School.
The LA Times has recently given itself a lot of credit for holding teachers responsible and for blaming teachers by name if they fail to guide students to become good test takers. Okay, I get it. That's fine. People should be held responsible. But if teachers are supposed to guide students to take tests, isn't someone supposed to guide teachers in how to do this guiding of students? Of course, teaching is a skill. You're not born with it. It doesn't descend from heaven. School administrators and schools of education are responsible for teaching these skills to teachers. It's their primary and sometimes their only responsibility. But in all this discussion about testing, I've yet to see a word about the responsibility of those who teach the teachers. It's also important to note that these tests that the LA Times is so worked up about are horribly flawed, deliberately skewed to measure test-taking ability rather than, for example, reading ability. The California Standard Test is the worst. I always take the test while my students are taking it, so I know something about this. This state test puts many of the hardest questions in the first 3 or 4 questions, a design that provokes many struggling students to give up. And the test is also full of questions that have 4 good answers or 4 bad answers out of 4 possible answers, so that I often do not know which answer is supposed to be correct. and I'm a very good test taker. What is the point of giving 10th graders such questions other than to demoralize the struggling students? Surely that's the effect. I don't mean to run on, but my students witness every day the ugly truth that the society they live holds them in the lowest regard, has the lowest expectations for them, and is in fact poised, waiting for them to make a mistake so that they can be locked away behind bars. Where are these students supposed to find the motivation to apply themselves to a test that has obviously been carefully designed and implemented at phenomenal expense to demean them? It would be possible to design a better test, and it should be done. It should contain a brief test to determine reading level and another brief section to measure the student's knowledge of math. It shouldn't take more than 90 minutes. Currently, this test wastes nearly a week. Let's find those teachers whose students do well on the test and pay those teachers $100,000 a year to help their fellow teachers learn how to get it done in the classroom. We can take the money from the useless, overpaid administrators we have now. This is John Hankey from Manual Arts High School in South L.A.
The jazz world is mourning saxophonist Buddy Collette. Collette died Sunday at Cedars-Sinai Hospital in Los Angeles. After suffering shortness of breath, he was 89. Collette played with the many of the jazz greats, such as Nat King Cole and Ella Fitzgerald. Marilyn Medawar has the remembrance of the jazz icon.
Buddy Collette was born into a family of musicians in Los Angeles. He grew up dreaming of a career in jazz. He got that and much more. Collette played the saxophone, the clarinet, the flute, but he was also a jazz educator. Collette was a key figure in the thriving LA music scene on Central Avenue in the 1950s. He helped keep bebop alive, and he played a key role in the development of the cool jazz movement. In a 2008 interview with Annenberg Radio's David Chunk, Buddy Collette spoke fondly of that music scene.
You know, it's wonderful that to have that experience and have the audience like you, and they're there to hear a good show, and you're part of that. It means that you must be doing something right to be there. I don't know. It's a wonderful thing.
Collette was also a pioneer and a civil rights activist in the fight against segregation in the music industry. He was the first African-American musician to play live on television. Frank Potenza performed with Buddy Collette. He's now chair of the Studio Guitar Jazz program at USC. He says Collette is an iconic figure in Los Angeles and in the history of jazz.
Well, he'll leave a huge void in terms of just the living history of the city, because he was part of the Central Avenue movement, which was basically the West Coast equivalent of the 52nd Street scene in New York. And again, he was one of the first musicians who broke the color line, and black musicians that broke the color line and worked in the Los Angeles studios. So he was an iconic figure.
Buddy Collette will always be remembered for his great music. Blues for Torrance, that he wrote as a tribute to California, was one of his favorites. Marilyn Medawar, Annenberg Radio News.
That's it for this Tuesday. We had help from Sarah Ramsey, Emily Frost, and Ryan Nunez, and Shelley Shu. Stephanie Guzman is our producer. Jessica Flores is the executive producer. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Madeline Cinto.